This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Even if there's people who are better at it than you, like, really the mark of success is just to keep going. It's not about, like, how amazingly you're doing it, but it's just that you continue to try.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep trying.
Gotta keep going.
Hello, my name is June.
And I'm Daph.
And you're listening to our podcast, List Me Tender, where we delve into bucket list things to do before you turn 30.
So this was meant to be a mystery week topic, and we've decided we'll be talking about starting a business. Woo-hoo. And we also have a very special guest, but before we get into that, I'm going to quickly read out the blurb.
Please do.
A lot of people commit to a corporate career as soon as they start working, but may later realize they would rather be running their own projects. Give it a go. Try it while the opportunity is still there and find out if that's a life you want for yourself.
Ooh, very, very dramatic. And I could not think of a better human being to speak to. She is both delightful and also the most YouTube famous celebrity person in our contacts list with a total of more than 1.2 million subscribers. It's Wendy! Wendy from With Wendy. Welcome!
Thank you.
Okay, so this is actually pretty awesome. I don't think I know anyone with like over a million subscribers.
Yes.
Did you get like one of those YouTube awards? Did they send you one?
I do. Oh, shoot. I'm all tethered to my laptop. Otherwise, I'd come get it for you.
Oh, no. It's okay.
It's okay. How big is it? Is it really heavy?
It's really scary. I'm scared to drop it.
And do you get one when you pass a million, or is it like once every 100 subscribers?
Once every 100 would be insane for YouTube. I would like start to be concerned that they were generating waste, because that would be so so many. But you get one for 100,000, and then you get one for a million. And then I think after that, it's like 5 million and then 10 million.
What?
And there's a certain point after 10 million, I think, where like there's no standard award. They just make you a custom award.
That is amazing. Wendy, why don't you give us an introduction about yourself?
Yes.
Okay. What have I been doing to now have over a million subscribers?
What has earned you these 1.2 million people across the world listening to you?
All right. I'm curious what people are like guessing in their minds, but wonder no more. I do DIY and sewing.
Yeah.
And I basically teach people how to make their own clothes, but it's also a bit of like a sewing adventure because I am also learning along the way. And for a long time, I felt like that was a weak point. Like, how come I can teach people how to make clothes if I'm also learning at the same time? But then I realized that's actually why people enjoy watching me, because then it's like, oh, this is a normal person who has not gone to fashion school and is not professionally trained, and they're able to accomplish and tackle these projects. So
right, so they're learning with you.
We get through it together. Mm, yeah.
That's beautiful.
That's like your unique selling proposition.
Yeah.
It's interesting, huh?
Yeah. It's always the grass is greener, right? Like, you look at someone who's more skillful than you and you're like, oh, crap, I can't do what they're doing.
Well, I just wanted to say that I was personally so, so excited for you to be on.
Aww,
because not only do you just have a lovely voice to listen to. Yeah, when James and I, we were like fresh in Canada, this is like 4.5 years ago.
Wow.
And we like walked into church in this like very frozen February.
Yeah.
And you were the first person we met, and you were just like such a lovely human being and just so friendly and welcoming. And I just remember thinking, wow, Canadians are so lovely. Obviously, not everyone's like you, but yeah, you were just like a very welcoming presence to be like greeted with.
Aw, thanks, June. I'm excited too.
I would love to hear how you got started. Did you start off when YouTube first came out thinking this is going to be me. Like, I want to be on YouTube creating content and sewing, or what's the story?
Maybe. Actually, weirdly, part of what you said is true. At first, I was like, nah, there's no way. But as I reflected on it, I was like, actually, yeah. I am guilty of that whole train of thought almost. When YouTube first came out, I definitely loved watching it. And only now, looking back, do I realize how there was elements in there where, like, people see it now too. Like, it was the first time kind of like there was a democratization of media, and in that sense I got to see so many Asian Americans, and I didn't even clue in at the time that that was what made it so special and fun for me. I was just like, oh cool, I get to watch some other Chinese people, mostly in California, living their sunny Californian life.
Shout out to Kev Jumba.
Yeah, and Ryan Higa, and like, I just enjoyed it so much. And then I was also that person in the friend group who would like make a fun video of us after we went on a trip, or like if we went to a retreat or had any kind of birthday or whatever, I'd like take the pictures and I'd make the video. So then eventually I just thought, like, I know how to do this stuff and I want to like make fun. I want to have fun making videos on the internet just like these people.
Yeah.
And really the most missing piece was the topic. So I was like, I've decided I would like to make videos on the internet, but I have no idea what they would be about. And then that summer I was super broke because I had just bought like a new laptop and a new camera to take photos. Then I had the tools and the lack of money, and so then I was like, okay, I can't buy any clothes, but I could just film myself making clothes and see how that goes.
Wow.
And then that kind of stuck. Like, people thought the videos were nice. I would get super positive feedback in the comments, and so because they were giving me feedback, I was just like, okay, I'll keep making videos. And I literally sometimes feel like I just snowballed myself into my current situation.
That is amazing.
I have so many questions already. Okay,
go ahead.
Questions. How long ago was your first video that you uploaded?
10 years, and it doesn't even exist anymore because it's so ugly. I was just like, I can't even let this video see the light of day anymore. I clicked delete. No, okay.
Wait, so you actually deleted
it? I did, but not only that, it's like the outcome was ugly and I taught wrong things. And back then, YouTube was very like how to focus, just like how on Google you look up like how to fix a broken faucet and that kind of thing.
I'm curious, was sewing something that was always in your life, or did you recently pick it up and you just wanted to give it a go? What's the story there?
It was super dormant. Yeah, like my mom taught me how to sew because she made all of my clothes. She made some of my brother's clothes. That's such a good way to save money back then, before fast fashion. And also, I never really applied that knowledge towards making my own clothes. I would just make stuff once in a while, but it was very, I would call it very dormant. And then it was only because I was like, I have to teach something. Everyone is teaching things on YouTube. Do I have any skills that are worth teaching? And I was like, I can sew. And it definitely, like, because of fast fashion and sewing has become a very lost skill between, I would say, our parents' generation and ours, since it's kind of like, why sew when you can save so much money?
You can just buy. Time.
Yeah, time especially. Oh my gosh.
So I'm curious, right now, are you fully financially afloat from your YouTube and your creative businesses?
Yeah. Yes. Although I don't literally like stare at the numbers every day. There might have been a point where I did that on a monthly basis, but I think yes. No, I'm pretty
sure.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
So was YouTube kind of, you went straight into it, or did you like work full time before and then was like, I don't want to be part of this rat race? And
yeah, tell us about the journey.
Just so you know, I'm definitely still in the rat race because I've been self-employed for 6 years.
Wow.
I'm very much like, there's no such thing as easy money. Like, that's totally my attitude. So after I graduated, I did work for 2 years, and it was at a marketing firm. And actually that company was super fun. Everyone there was nice. Got along with everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I just literally was living that, like, millennial who gets a fun job and is just like, woohoo.
Yeah.
So I didn't quit because I didn't like the job, is what I'm trying to say. the job was kind of chill, and that gave me opportunity whenever I went home to just be like, okay, now I'm going to work on my YouTube channel, and on the weekends I'll work on my channel. And so I think if I had gone into a more demanding job, it's possible the YouTube channel might have just kind of like fizzled out, because I wouldn't even have time to nurture it. It was really in the last of those 2 years, I started to get this sensation, like in my head, I would imagine it to be like as if there were two treadmills at different speeds, and I was like 1 foot on one treadmill and 1 foot on the other. I'm like awkwardly between them, and I'm trying to do this like lopsided run, like wee-hoo, wee-hoo, wee-hoo. And then that's when I thought, like, maybe I should see if I could just focus on the YouTube channel for a year. That was kind of like the framework that I thought about it, and I was like, what would happen if I could just go do a year?
When you were thinking about that year of just doing YouTube, what was your audience at that point? Like, was it enough that you were kind of getting some sort of revenue that you had enough confidence to kind of take that giant leap?
Yeah. So back then I was just making ad revenue that could cover my rent, and my rent and living expenses were kind of equal at that time. And so my thought process was like, oh, if I can maybe ask my parents if they'll help cover my rent for a year, and then I'll pay them back, then that would mean that I'm making enough money to do this for a year, like comfortably, without feeling like I, you know, like incurred too much, I don't know, debt or stress. I was like, I know it sounds risky, but like, it's technically the least risky time in my life to do this, because I don't have children that I have to feed or a mortgage that I have to pay off, you know, like, I know everyone's dealing with their own kind of like financial stresses, but it does kind of feel like as you get older in life, more and more responsibility comes onto your shoulders. And so I did feel a bit like I should try now so that later my stress won't be just like, I don't know. If I do it now, my stress will be just on me. It won't be on as many other people around me.
It's nice that you had this plan and you have a bit of a safety net as well to really let you then focus and not feel guilty or stressed.
I'm still stuck on the decision. I just feel like it's such an incredibly courageous thing that you did. You mentioned that you didn't hate your job. In fact, you rather enjoyed your job. What were some of the factors that went into you just making that call and saying, right, like, this is the thing that I want to be doing for the next 12 months?
There were a few things. One was that whole idea, like, you know how with entry-level job applications, the most cruel ones are like 1 to 2 years experience. And you're like, where am I getting 1 to 2 years experience? Because of that sentence, I thought to myself, okay, I have 2 years of work experience. So if I really had to come back and start at entry-level, I've got it, the 1 to 2 years work experience. The other thing was, oh, there was a sense of urgency. That year that I quit, there was like a live concert with a couple of Toronto YouTubers that packed Yonge and Dundas Square, which is our kind of like Times Square equivalent of New York. And then there was an announcement that YouTube was opening up a space just for creators in Toronto, which was like, oh, whoa, like YouTube knows we exist and they want to invest in us. And then there was a third thing too, I think maybe like a film festival or something like that, but it was only for YouTubers. And so all of those things were happening in Toronto, and that gave me a bit of that push, because I honestly felt like I was witnessing like the ship taking off, and it was just like, if you don't jump into the water and start like paddling desperately now, you may never catch up, and you may never know what your YouTube world could look like if you just keep waiting. So it just kind of felt like, if I don't try now, it'll be crappier to try later, is kind of the feeling.
How old were you when all this transpired?
I quit when I was 25.
That is so mature thinking on your part. I feel like at age 25, all I was like, wow, party, work, drink, spend all your money. Like,
none of clothes. That side hustle. Not make this.
Yeah, buy clothes that I never wear.
Okay, I've also bought clothes and never wear. No, but, okay, and that's fair too. Like, for example, there's a lot of things I haven't done. Like, I never went on exchange. I never, like, moved to another place and, like, you know, lived in a foreign city. And I honestly, like, almost even to a sad or unhealthy degree, I really did for a while embrace that toxic mentality of like, you have to work to deserve it. And like, you have to be willing to like cut off your friends and like not, you know, like not talk to your family and like be all in with your business. And there was one wedding, I think like just over 2 years after I had quit, where I don't know exactly what happened at the wedding, but being around my friends, but feeling that I wasn't as close to them as I had been in the past, like really hit me. And then thankfully, wow, that was the time where I was like, okay, in this, thankfully that wedding was like literally around Christmas. So then I was like, in the new year, I will reprioritize like friendship and like healthy relationships with the people around me, instead of continuing to buy into this, like, being an entrepreneur means, like, you give up sleep, you give up friends, you give up social life, like, all that stuff.
Yeah. I would actually love to hear more about, you mentioned financial stress a few times now. Mm. Can you tell us more about what that looked like for you and how you handled it?
I think, in retrospect, it's easy for me to say it was very in my head, because I was never under like extreme stress, but it was occupying my head a lot. I remember one time we went to go get pho, and then one of my friends casually was like, oh my gosh, like, can we split an appetizer? And I like literally felt my stress level rise on the inside. Cause I was like, yo, man, like in my head, I was like, I came here for $10 pho. I cannot split an appetizer. So stressful.
Oh man, that takes me back to student life.
Yeah.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
I think it was the stress really... Financial is maybe just like an excuse or a kind of like a guise for me to stress about like whether or not I would really succeed. And to me, like, because my definition of that 1 year had been about like, I should try to achieve financial stability by the end of it, I think that finance part really became the defining point of like, can I succeed?
Mm-hmm. Wow. What a hustle.
It's painful.
But I think that's the big part about starting your own business that I think people on the outside don't realize is how much discipline. It's harder. Yeah. It's so much harder than being an employee.
Yeah. It's hard in a different way. It's one thing, especially what you said about how like people don't know. On top of that, it's like almost my job to present that I'm doing great. Especially back then, that like boss babe thing was just like
girl boss.
The fervor was like peak levels. I also don't think people realize how much it would be like unsavory for me to sound like I was complaining or ungrateful.
Right.
Because I know too that like it's because of certain privileges, like having parents who can support me, and like those are insane privileges that like not everyone gets to have. And so you one, don't get really feel like you should complain or even project that this is challenging. And then also on top of that, like the girl boss stuff was in the air. And so, yeah, that definitely contributes to the stress, because it's kind of like you really feel, I think like one of the strongest negative feelings I've felt throughout this whole process would be loneliness. Like this feeling of that, like no one else really can like do it for you. Like you really just have to do it yourself. A lot of the reason why people don't want to start their side business or something like that is because they're really worried about, like, if you're a person who's used to everything going well in life, that's definitely a stressor. And that's one I relate to a lot. Like, you don't want this to be the first time you fail because you're so unfamiliar with the feeling of failure. Mm-hmm. For me, like, the way I overcome that fear is just believing that even when I do stuff, even when it fails, there will be really valuable learnings and that I will learn so much faster through failure. Meet and greets where like literally almost not a soul showed up. And in your head, wow, you're like, oh, what will we do if there's a lineup? And then on the day of, you're like, yeah, I was chill. I just talked to like 4 people for a long time. There's all sorts of crappy stuff that's happened, but then I've seen how it's refined me. And so every time I just try to like assess and measure the risk and be like, am I willing to take this risk for the benefit of learning from it? And then that helps me to be a bit more like, okay, we can do this.
But that's the only way, right? It's like the only way is up.
Because YouTube is kind of like part entertainment business, I'll look at people who are like actors or filmmakers. And to me, I'm like, they've gone through a ton of failure. And really, it's the ones who just like keep going at it that like kind of develop a bit of like a legacy and a streak.
Right.
But I don't like failure. I get scared.
For every failed project, do you do another big thing straight away, or do you kind of coast to gain back the confidence? Yeah. How does that look?
No, I definitely become like a little turtle and I'm like, oh, and then I retract my head into my body and I'm like, okay, let's do things that are kind to myself for a little bit so that I can like regain my confidence. I think that's important. Even if there's people who are better at it than you, like really the mark of success is just to keep going. It's not about like how amazingly you're doing it, but it's just that you continue to try.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep trying.
Gotta keep going. Actually, I'm super curious if you guys went through similar types of like, I don't know, financial stress and like, what will my friends think? What happens if we fail?
Funnily enough, today we got an email from our podcast network.
Congrats! And
the most hilarious thing is that the first load was like quite a bit, and I think he said, I just want to wait until it hits like a certain threshold for me to transfer the money.
Oh yes, I literally have this exact story as well in my life.
But the thing is, the last 4 months it still hasn't hit that threshold. So every 2 months he sends us an email being like, this month you made this many dollars, single digits.
No.
Can I wait till the next time? And we always have to write this like gracious email being like, oh my goodness, don't even apologize. Of course, it can wait. On a serious note, I guess for me, this podcast, especially because I'm not one of those people where I'm good at following through completely with a thing. I really love what you said about just keep doing it and then you will keep doing it. It's like very pragmatic advice.
Yeah.
But partly I think because I have DAF to keep me accountable for this podcast.
Go DAF.
That's the main reason why it's still happening. Because there's another human on the other end being like, hey, let's get this going.
It's true. That's something I value a lot.
Sharing June's sentiment, I think having someone else there, like we're both in it together. So I don't want to like let the other person down as well. And I think like that really, really kind of helps in terms of finding the momentum, finding the inspiration, and like having, not feeling you're so isolated. I think that comment you made about feeling lonely, kind of big part of it as well.
Yeah, and that's why there's so many YouTube channels where it's a duo. It's like they share it together, and so then they share the energy, which is nice too.
I was gonna ask, do you have like a coach or something?
I wish.
I feel like Wendy would make a great coach.
Actually, yeah, I am kind of curious. I was always so resentful whenever I would go to business things and they'd be like, the number one thing is to find a mentor. And I'd be like, where? Like, I was constantly looking for people who I thought could be a mentor. But I do think people are truly like so busy these days. I found it to be like a very hard thing to find in life. But I spend a ton of time thinking, because my YouTube business, like I would say, left like a pretty negative impact on my mental health, maybe a year or two ago, that it actually forced me to think about it even more deliberately. And it was thankfully due to my partner being like, if YouTube is making you this sad, like you shouldn't continue. And I really should like take steps to think about this critically, about like, what do I want? Or like, why am I doing it? Or like, how can I do this in a more healthy way? Or else like, yeah, he's right. Like I shouldn't continue in this kind of like frustrated, sad state.
I think what's special, I'm not sure about guys, but I feel like girls are especially hard on ourselves. Yeah. We think it's the worst thing ever. And everyone's like, no, that was fine. Or that was really great. And you're like, no, yeah. I can pick out every single thing that
are
was
you
bad
in my
with
brain?
It.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like girls have to do the most sometimes. So insane.
Okay, and I also want to add, like, Asian women as well. I've been reading this book called Minor Feelings, and there's this line in it. It's by Kathy Hong Park, and she wrote, Asians take up space apologetically. And that sentence just hit me like a ton of bricks, because there's so many times in my life where I feel like I'm being an imposition by, like, vocalizing my opinion or like putting myself out there
for sure,
and so
it's
there's
totally
a lot
like,
of that
don't
that
be
you're
too
fighting
loud.
Against
yes yeah. Oh yeah, I definitely, what you just said has been something on my mind a lot too, like I apologize if I'm like being too loud in public,
but you should stop apologizing.
I know, it's so tricky, these kind of like deeper things that have been ingrained in us and also ingrained in others to expect of us. Is very interesting.
Well, even though that was not the most positive of notes to kind of wrap up this conversation.
Fight the invisible forces!
Fight the man!
No, it is positive. It's acknowledging,
true.
That this is happening. The fact that we are like thinking about it,
step
and
one,
discussing
recognize.
It and trying to change. Mm. It's going to take a time, but yeah, at least we're like taking the first steps towards it.
Well, thank you so much for just your raw and honest
conversation.
And like recounting of your journey of owning your own business. It doesn't sound like it's at all been easy, but it sounds like with every challenge you've kind of smashed it. So inspiring.
Not smashed it, but I'm still standing, so.
Well, 1.2 million subscribers would beg to differ. Actually, question, do you think starting your own business, or at least earning your own revenue that you created, is something that people should do before they turn 30?
I'm biased, but I would say yes, because it's very gratifying to see the fruit of your labor. I think a lot of us have forgotten that like lemonade stand feeling. Oh, the other thing I think is really good is if you feel like you don't know yourself very well, running your own business is such a way to discover all of your weird quirks and things that you like might love or might hate about yourself. Like when it all comes down to you, you just like the procrastination, timeliness on getting projects done, like so many of your habits will come to light. And I think it's a very refining process to just show yourself like, oh, it really, when it really does come down to me, I don't do certain things the right way, or I don't do certain things the fast way. That's, I think, the most rewarding thing I've gotten out of it. It's gratifying for sure to make my own income and to feel like I built something. And then it's also been extremely illuminating on like, who am I? How do I operate? And like, what are my strengths and weaknesses?
Wow. It's like a self-discovery
journey. Yeah, definitely. Like when you're stressed and tired.
Like a boot camp.
Yeah, you learn how hard you can be on yourself, or how, I don't know.
What your values and priorities.
Yeah. Are. Oh, yeah. The values and priorities. Yes, yes, yes. Very much so.
Now's a part of our podcast where we talk about some frequently asked questions. Wendy, what's the one thing you're really proud that you did before you turned 30?
It definitely is the case that this business is one of the biggest decisions that's defined what has happened in my life. And so I am really proud I took the step, because I'm actually shocked, like, knowing how risk averse I am. And so I'm shocked that I was willing to be like, let's introduce financial insecurity and like personal insecurity, being the face of the brand, and like go through all that crap. So I am proud that I gave this a go.
Amazing.
But maybe this is the true you.
What?
this is the real you underneath the layers. You know?
I found myself.
I feel like there's this like idea of who you should be and who you really are. And maybe this is who you really are. Question number two. What's one thing you would recommend everyone try or do before they turn 30?
Okay. My answer is that they should definitely try to pick up a hobby that they love. And it's because I think hobbies are often the things that kind of cross over into becoming a side business. So it's an easy way to self-discover and explore like what kinds of side businesses you might be interested in if you want to do a side business. But hobby, and like I mean hobby so broadly, I think it's good to explore and be open-minded, because it just helps you have playtime. It like spurs up your creativity, and honestly, a good hobby like truly does spark joy, and it's very rewarding to see yourself grow in it.
Very true. Something you'd like to say to your 40-year-old self?
Okay, literally when I read this question, the very first thing that came to my mind was that song. I was like, everything I do it for you. I constantly am just like, oh man, I'm very like, every time I don't want to do something, I'm very like, this is for you, future Wendy. Ugh. And I like, go do the thing. Everything I'll say to my 40-year-old self is, I did it all for you. I hope you're happy.
Enjoy so the good. Fruits of my labor. Well, Wendy, that has been a very insightful and super delightful conversation. Aww. I want to give you a chance to plug your YouTube channel, but also your very new venture of podcasting.
Yeah, it's true. I've like finally delved into podcasting and I'm having a good time. But my YouTube channel is With Wendy, if you want to see if sewing or watching someone sew is for you. And then my new podcast is called Fortune Cookie with Wendy. And it's called Fortune Cookie because it's just like, actually, it kind of reminds me of your blurb thing, but it's like, I crack open a fortune cookie, there's an ism, sometimes they're a bit like cliche, but through that, I share like past stories, and it's very much stuff I wish I had learned earlier, and I had like the maturity to think about or process. It's like crap that I had to learn the hard way type of thing. But because I am a person who values introspection a lot, I find I'm using my podcast to try to like encourage people to also introspect. If you want to spend time just like in your feelings a little bit and relaxing, then I think Fortune Cookie will be a nice little anecdotal podcast for you.
Amazing. But yes, thank you so much for this chat. It's been so interesting and it's been such good flowy conversation, and so happy to kind of hear your journey and, you know, like, I guess the hard parts about it too.
So this has actually wrapped up the last of the topics of season 2. Can't believe we have done 11 full episodes of different content, which is like super exciting, which means the next time you'll hear from us, it will be the retro episode to wrap up this season.
Thank you again for listening, and if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you like and rate us on Apple iTunes and share this with your friends, and we'll chat to you guys in 2 weeks time. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.